A big day on the What Podcast today. Welcome back in Barry Corder, Lord Taco. I'm Brad. The possibly the biggest show we've ever done, Barry.
Can
smiling
you see the
ear
smile
to ear. How
face?
Excited are you today, buddy?
This is a dream, an yeah? absolute dream. If you'd have told me in 2008 that I would ever have the chance to interview this guy, much less be in the same room with him, yeah. Unbelievable.
What was special about 2008?
That's when I went to the first one just for the day. So 2007 was my first Bonnaroo.
So 2002, you went and you just spent a day
just
there.
Went. Yeah,
just
didn't
to see what
really
it was like.
Much. Right, went for the paper just as a job.
Did you go after you heard about the news about traffic, or had you already planned on going?
Yes, I got to work and the bosses said traffic is backed up, you know, almost
there.
To Nashville going that way and almost Chattanooga going our way. Here's a photographer, get there and
yeah,
see
okay.
what's up. And got there and they, just like always, we dreaded the traffic, dreaded standing in line, walked right in, walked into Centaroo and saw a kid smoking a bong in an inflatable bong. And I was like, this is a little bit different. This is kind of cool. And we did our job and left, and I thought I would like to go back, but I didn't camp, you know, had no interest in camping in a field for 4 days. But in 07, they decided that because I was salaried and they were tired of paying hourly people, that I was the entertainment writer, I should go.
Yeah.
And liked it very much. But 08, I went and saw My Morning Jacket, who I honestly knew nothing about. At that midnight show that ended up being 4 hours. And I'm not kidding when I say that's all I listened to for 6 months when I came home. Mm. Over and over and over. And it's been that way ever since.
Yeah.
And you'll hear it changed. I mean, I'm doing this podcast because of My Morning Jacket and Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It changed the whole live music experience thing for me.
I love that story because, you know, those first few years, it was a real struggle, man. And I hate to be the get off my lawn guy, but it's you just don't know how good you have it right now. It's a really well done professional music festival now. Back in the day, it was, you know, it was a combination of the fish people and just whoever we can get to show up. And it was a free for all. There was very little organization to it. It was pretty messy. And, you know, honestly, I don't know if you felt this way, but a tad scary.
It was very scary.
Because it was intimidating.
Extremely scary.
Shakedown Street was legitimately a shakedown. I'll never forget a guy who was literally waving around a dryer door. I mean, it was like lunatics off the street who were just hanging out, and you had no idea, because at the time you could walk into the campsite. There was no security around the campsite, so if you just happened to be a wanderer around Manchester, I mean, there were thefts like crazy in the first couple of years. It was a very strange experience, and to be where it is today is such a wild, wild thing. You know, I'm surprised it took you so long to come back, though. I went the second year, 2003, and then, I'm sorry, 2004 was my first year, and it was the torrential downpour year, the classic My Morning Jacket show. I will never forget that rainstorm. It was the worst rainstorm I've ever been in my life, and I've sat through a hurricane in New Orleans. I've never felt more scared in a storm than I did that moment, because I didn't know where I was going. I had no idea what was going on. I literally watched My Morning Jacket finish as I ran through trying to find shelter, and then you're just locked down for the next few hours.
Right.
To think at that moment, just prior to that fear, there was one of the most iconic Bonnaroo moments in the history of the festival happening literally right to my right as I'm rushing through to try and find shelter is pretty remarkable. And, you know, goes to show we've come a long way, my friend. Come a very long way.
Well, yeah, and at that time, 04, all I would have been thinking is, I'm glad I'm not in a field in Manchester in a torrential rain right now listening to bands that I honestly had never heard of.
And by the way, that was my first experience with Bonnaroo. That was my first day.
My first day it rained that night. I remember thunderstorms. Look, I was sitting in my little pup tent watching it rain thinking, I'm going to die. I mean, it's not funny because James talks about that in this interview that you're about to hear, a similar, but I'm thinking, I'm not going to make it through this, you know? Yeah. And why am I here? You know, all of those things are going through my, and then of course, sun comes out and you wake up and you start having the experiences that we've talked about here 100 times.
It's that second year redemption because you had the exact same experience. You came back in 2008 and you were hooked, right? We came back in 2005 and I was hooked. Something just happened. And you know, I had sworn that I was never coming back. I had such a terrible, miserable experience that first year. And I was like, I'm not doing it. But the second I got back in, something happened. That magical Bonnaroo moment happened and just hit me. And I, you know, been a sucker ever since. And I don't know if there's somebody that has represented this festival better than Jim James in My Morning Jacket.
No, I think...
It might have been a fish festival to begin with, and a widespread panic festival.
Oh yeah,
but I don't think a band represents this brand.
No, they're part of the progression and development, and it's fun to hear him talk about the many times they've been and how they've all been special. I guess it was 15. I remember being there, and a young person. She was probably college age. We were talking, and she said, "My Morning Jacket is the perfect Bonnaroo band," and I obviously was already thinking it, but to hear it from, you know, someone else, especially someone of a much younger generation, I mean, I can't think of another one.
Yeah, and, you know, I know that this may fall on some deaf ears for some of the younger listeners and patrons of this podcast, but, you know, the roots of this festival go right through My Morning Jacket, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006. That's when this thing was really built. And the thing that you're celebrating and going to every year is made possible by, you know, bands like, you know, My Morning Jacket and Humphreys McGee. And you know, yeah. I know it may not be for everybody, but I hope that in the God knows how long this My Morning Jacket set's going to be, even if you don't like them, I hope that you go and, you know, give them back something that they've given us for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. You know, if nothing else, just out of respect, I hope that, you know, you at least show up and spend a few minutes with My Morning Jacket.
We didn't spend a lot of time talking to it, and it comes at the end, but he mentioned something that I think is a key element, and that is that idea of the bands hanging around, going to see each other. I mean, we've heard about that anecdotally over the years. David Byrne riding around on a bicycle from stage to stage, you know, those kinds of things.
I'll never forget seeing Springsteen on a golf cart high-fiving everybody through the crowd.
But that's the kind of thing that makes it special, right? You never know what you're going to see. It never feels like the bands show up on their bus, go on stage, do their usual 90-minute set, get back on the bus, and leave. Mm-hmm. It's a community, backstage, front of house, Centaroo, camping, all of that. And it was really interesting for me to hear him talk about sort of he misses some of the old days when it was a little looser, and they can do that. Because that's a huge part of what the vibe was for me that I fell in love with so early was like, this is just different. Everything about this is different.
Mm-hmm.
And even you'll hear him talk about their band's first year when the answer to everything was yes. You know, we do this? Yes, go do it. Yes,
if you haven't picked up yet, Jim James is our guest today, and you know, let's wax poetic about him afterwards. But this is a big one, Barry, because they're celebrating the 20th anniversary of that magical 2004 show with a reissue. I guess not even a reissue, a release of the show, the 2004 show on vinyl. Welcome to the Thunderdome?
I wrote it down. Beyond Thunder.
Beyond. Nice. Beyond the Thunderdome, yes. And it's a multi-part series of all of the other great live shows in the history of My Morning Jacket, one of which happens to be Volume 3, which is the 20th anniversary of the Bonnaroo Show.
It's Return to Thunderdome. Bonnaroo 2004, Thunder. Return to Thunderdome.
Yeah, Beyond Thunderdome was Mad Max.
Okay.
Yeah, Mad Max. I thought so as soon as I said it.
Well, you know, I actually we should have asked this, but what is I don't understand what the significance of Thunderdome is. Is that what?
I don't know either.
Okay. All right. Well, without further ado, I'm really, really happy about this. I can't believe I don't know. We'll talk about how it came to be after we talked to Jim James of My Morning Jacket, an honor on the What Podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Jim, honor to have you with us, Brad Barry, Lord Taco. I don't know if you know much about this little venture of ours, but we started this in the spirit of Bonnaroo, and I don't know, maybe arguably, no person and no band personifies Bonnaroo more than you in My Morning Jacket. So this is sort of like the grand, Barry keeps calling My Morning Jacket and Jim James our white whale. And you joining us today is a high honor, my friend.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
It goes, I'm going to fanboy for a while. We've said on this show that Bonnaroo changed our lives. And you guys in 08 for me were a huge part of that. I left there and listened to nothing but My Morning Jacket for about 6 months. So, that's the truth.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was sort of like rehab for you.
It reintroduced the fun of live music for me. And so I want to start with that. Brad's been in radio 20 years. I was in newspapers for 37 years. So live music had sort of gotten cookie cutter, kind of stale. You know, all the shows seemed like they were set on the same schedule and choreography and everything. And then Bonnaroo and you guys happened. So I don't want to do all the talking because I know we're here to talk about 04, but I wanted to just sort of set the stage there. And I don't know, Brad, I know you were making notes. I'll let you go first, and then I have my question.
No, I mean, I think that it starts, you know, just in general about your feelings about Bonnaroo. What does Bonnaroo mean to you specifically in My Morning Jacket?
Well, I mean, Bonnaroo for us was really the first place we ever experienced anything like that. You know, we had really only played like clubs and we had done like a couple festivals here and there, but that was the first time we'd ever really experienced the what it was like to kind of go to another world, like an alternate reality. And that was kind of what the show itself, getting to play in front of that many people, especially, you know, those first few times that we got to do that, you know, as a younger band, those first times you get to play in front of, you know, a sea of people is such a crazy experience. But beyond even that, just the it was an alternate reality, you know, it was a chance to kind of go into this other reality and really dig into it and really explore it and really have a lot of fun running around and experiencing all the other bands and all of the silent disco, late night stuff, you know, just we would just run, you know, for days. That was just one of my first experiences of like what it was like to kind of enter that kind of alternate space.
Along those lines, and how much did you know ahead of time? What was your anticipation or perception. I mean, it was all so new. It's hard for people to remember 2002, 2003, and 4. You know, with your show, really, it, you know, we're looking back now, so it's, you know, we got hindsight. But how much did you anticipate that it might be like that going in?
Well, we never knew what to anticipate. You know, as a kid, and in our culture, you hear all the legends of Woodstock and, you know, all the things that came before your generation. And, you know, coming up in around Louisville and the area, Bonnaroo was like the mythic, you know, like Woodstock or whatever thing that you know, we always hoped we could get on. I mean, it was still pretty new back then, but we had been hearing about it, and we're just like, oh, if we can only get to Bonnaroo, you know, that's like the key to everything, you know. So we were just so excited to get the offer to play. That first year we played in the tent, which was, I can't remember if it was 2002 or 2003. Okay, 2003, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so when we went, we just like went. We went in deep, you know, we just went in like, we stayed there the whole time and just like had, you know, partied and danced and had so much fun, kind of just out in the world.
Well, in 2003, it was at that tent, so you stay all weekend. Was there a moment that you remember in 2003 that got you, that it immediately connected, or was it the performance, the stage show, or is it someone else's show?
Both. Perhaps? Oh my God. It was just, it was like, yes. It was like, everything was like, yes. It was like every question you ask is like, yes, 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 yes. You know, it's like, is our show going to be awesome? Yes. Are we going to see lots of other great bands? Yes. Are we going to have lots of free drinks everywhere? Yes. Are there going to be amazing people everywhere? Yes. Are we going to dance all night long at this fucking crazy silent disco thing? Yes. Are we going to meet wild like characters out in the, you know, it's just like every single thing. And, you know, I think everybody knows in life, in the real world, there's a lot of no's. You know, it's like there's a lot of, you can't do that. Nope, not here. Not that way. You know, and I think a lot of people, it's like the, it's an escape. You know, it's definitely an escapist thing, because I think a lot of people, you see people out running wild that need that escape from their everyday. So I think it's kind of a, obviously, as long as you're, doing it like in a kind way or whatever, you know, it's hard to say healthy because there's so much drugs and drinking and stuff involved. But I think as long as kindness is in your heart, you know, and you're exploring and you're searching. And I always felt like the vibes there were kind, and you know, I always felt really welcome and good. And the experience felt really positive.
In 2003, though, you guys, I mean, you specifically, I don't know, I'm not going to speak for the rest of the band, we're still babies. Did you think at the time, you're like, oh, no, we did this so well, we're coming back next year?
Oh, no, I'm kind of guilty of being very defeatist. I always think everything's going to be the last. I've spent a lot of time in therapy trying to get over this, because we always would just joke, like, well, that sure was fun. I guess we better enjoy, you know, like we better enjoy this. It's the last time they're ever going to have us back. Cause we just always felt like such a sore thumb. We've always felt like we never fit in anywhere, musically. And, the first couple records we made, we literally made them like 74 minutes long as a CD was or whatever. Cause we're like, well, we better put all our music on these records. Cause they're never going to let us make another record. So we better get it all out there. So, no, we just kind of every single thing we ever did, we always thought it was going to be our last. So I don't think there was ever any thought that we would come back.
I'm so glad to hear you talk about that 03, because it sounds like one of the things about Bonnaroo and hearing you say it's all about yes and everything is you kind of have to experience a little bit to know where the boundaries are or that there are no boundaries. So I'm guessing that sort of helped inform the 04 show, right? Because you'd done it, you kind of knew what the vibe was like, you knew what the farm was like. So did that kind of open doors for you guys to say, yeah, we're going to go in this next time and just hit it really, really hard?
Well, it's funny because for a while, yeah, I mean, it is, you know, everybody knows that feeling of the first time you do anything, there's so much fear and just confusion because you have no idea what it even is. So then the second time you come back, you're like, okay, at least we know what this thing is. But at that point, we were still just kind of in survival mode, kind of like trying to get, just trying to keep going. Because we had had our original guitar player, John, our original keyboard player, Danny, had left the band. And we had gone through this big kind of, you know, traumatic change that we thought might be the end of the band. So once Bo and Carl joined the band, and then, you know, we were on tour quite a bit leading up to that 04 Bonnaroo. But that was still kind of like, we were just like, we got to survive this somehow. It wasn't even like, let's think of what we can do to make it cool. It's just like, I hope we can make it through. You know, we were just trying to make it through, period. And that's what's so interesting about the 04 show to me is like the beginning of it, especially, it was just so hot and so dry and so brutal. You know, it just felt like somebody put heaters all over the stage, and just, it was just so brutal. You know, and when you look at the crowd, they're all like melted and everybody's going, it was so, you know, and we were trying our best, you know, we're like, and it was fun. I think the beginning of the set is good too, but it's just like, and I think most bands would agree, it's kind of hard playing in the daylight anyway, at least for me. It's just like, kind of like, you know, there's nowhere to hide and you're so vulnerable and exposed. But then when you crank the heat up to 1,000 degrees, and it's just like, it's crazy. So then when the rain came in and the storm came in, and it's just like, it was, that was like, you know, it was like a baptism for sure. Cause we were like, okay, we can stop just trying to survive and actually like, let's enjoy this and build this and relish this, as opposed to just trying to live through it.
That's a interesting way to describe it, considering if you've spent all these years and all this time and all these experiences thinking that it was the last time you would ever do it, or you had a defeatist attitude, the fact that you went in thinking, I don't know how this is going to go. We got a guitar player. I don't know if it's going to work out. And then the universe literally gives you a torrential downpour that is the heaviest that Bonner has ever seen. I can't imagine you guys going like, well,
yeah,
they don't want us to finish. They do not want us to ever play again.
Yeah. And then, no, in the moment it was great because it was just so fucking hot. I mean, it was purely like a body thing. You know, it was just like, I was just glad that my body wasn't going to be roasted to death anymore. You know, it was like, just like, I didn't even think about the implications or the, you know, because from the stage, as the wind and the rain and the gray clouds rolled in, you just watched the crowd. They were all like little burned flowers. And as the rain started to come, everybody just went up and like came to life again. You know, and it was like just this baptism for everybody that was so amazing, you know, just purely like physically, you know. And then it turned into a spiritual moment, like a really beautiful experience. But at the beginning, it was just like, we've been wandering the desert, you know, and now there's water. You know, that simple,
we're familiar.
Was there a moment in the show, like during the rain, I guess you don't even think about getting, I don't know, electrocuted, but is there a moment that you guys all looked around during a certain song, or, you know, I don't know if it was a certain break, but was there a moment where everybody looked around and said, oh my God, there's something going on right now?
It definitely felt great, you know, and we've always had this motto since the earliest days of the band of like, you don't stop. Like, no matter what happens, you do not stop playing. Unless somebody literally comes up and grabs you off stage and hauls you off stage, you don't stop, you know. And so that was kind of half the fun for us, was like, okay, here's this rain and here's this, and we're not going to stop, you know, unless like somebody drags us off stage, or eventually the rain killed all of our amps and killed all of our speakers, you know. So like the guitars went out and the bass went out, and that's the part I love of the end of the show, is like the only thing still going were like Patrick's drums and Bo's amp still work for some reason, you know. So it's just Bo and Patrick playing at the end. And yeah, it's just so we kind of we definitely looked at it as a challenge. And at the time, I mean, I've kind of had my struggles with different mental problems or issues, and at the time, I kind of hoped that I would just get electrocuted or something, because the force of it was so powerful that, you know, running around in my bare feet and all that water with all the wires and stuff. And I still remember the visceral feeling of like my bare feet in this pile of wires with all this water full, you know, like this water up to my, you know, covering my feet. And I was just like, man, like if I get electrocuted right now, like that, what a cool doorway this would be to walk out of this fucking crazy life that I've struggled with so much. And I'm glad that didn't happen. But at the time, I was just, you know, that was kind of part of it for me, too. I was like, maybe this is my way out.
Wow.
I mean, Jim, I don't want to take this to a dark place. But afterwards, did you sort of reflect on that and say to yourself, ooh, that was maybe not the right way to think about that?
No, I mean, I've just gone up and down my entire life, you know. Sometimes I've really enjoyed life, and I mean, whatever, everybody does, you know. But sure. Sometimes I just really have struggled and not enjoyed this realm, and I have just not really. So I've kind of gone up and down with thoughts like that, and luckily I've spent a lot of time in therapy and doing a lot of work on myself, and I don't feel like that anymore, but.
Well, thank God. Thank God. Good for
you.
You
know, it's just kind of it's a weird thing. You know, it's like, it's no secret that so many people struggle with mental illness and all sorts of things and depression. And
Well, it's surprising that you can look back on this show so fondly if it holds such a, I mean, that's a major piece of darkness that comes with it.
Well, that's always been a part of my life, though. And unfortunately, I've had a lot of friends that have committed suicide, and a lot of my heroes, you know, I've seen die from suicide and drug addiction. And, you know, it's something that was always in the back of my mind. And I'm so glad that I never fully went there or whatever. But it's like, you know, a lot of people who struggle with depression or mental illness, you know, it's like suicide's this kind of fucking being that's with you all the time. You know, it's like sometimes it's like leaves and you forget about it, and other times it comes back and it's like, yeah, what do you think? And what do you think? Is now the time to walk out the door or whatever? And I think the more time I've tried to get to know myself and do therapy and make myself comfortable with just the idea of death in general, I've just learned more in recent years how to become more peaceful, how to embrace this realm and this life and stuff. But yeah, it's really interesting that how things roll and how things go. I mean, you know, but when I look back on it now, though, I still, even though that was a big part of it for me, I still also see the joy of the show. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I really love this concept of both. And, you know, it was possible for me, even in that moment and now, for that show to be both unbelievably joyful and unbelievably painful at that point in my life, you know, that juncture.
I know, so either mm-hmm.
I hold both those
either
feelings.
From reading or hearing from people, it's that weird dichotomy of you're in front of 80,000 people being loved and yet you're having these dark thoughts. You know, it's kind of a guilty, why are they here listening to me, man? I'm glad they're here listening to me kind of, you know, struggle, I guess.
Yep.
At what point, I mean, this show, and I don't mean to change your subject, Brad, if you have another. Point, I mean, this show is so legendary, obviously. It's 20-year anniversary, and you guys are releasing a double vinyl set on the 9th of June, which, by the way, I've ordered, and I can't wait for it to get here. At what point did you know it was a special show? And I don't mean necessarily during maybe months and weeks after. How did it change the attitude of the band?
Oh, right when we walked off. Oh, right when we walked off stage. I mean, we all just huddled right there on stage, and we were just so stoked, so excited. You know, we felt like we won the Super Bowl or something. You know, we were just like so. It was so beautiful. You know, it really felt like a baptism and like a securing of. That we were supposed to be a band, you know, that Carl and Bo really fit in and they really made it through this challenge. They didn't run, you know, they didn't get scared by the rain and run off stage or whatever. You know, it was like this thing that we were like all in it together. So it was really like the baptism of what My Morning Jacket was meant to be and has been. You know, it's Bo and Carl it's their 20th anniversary as well. You know, so the majority of the band is them. You know, and so it was the beautiful beginning to that.
I bet it also helps that the set was actually good and sounded the way that you wanted it to sound too, right? Or else.
Well, that was incredible. Yeah, because we had the for the files and the documentary, all the video files and the audio files. It's like, you know, they were all on some old, outdated hard drive system, you know, from 20 years ago that they had to dig through, you know, crates and pallets and shit. And luckily they found them, and it was a lot of work going through and stuff. But yeah, we were so stoked once Tucker Martin got them all pulled up and mixed it and stuff. It was so cool hearing it back the first time and being like, oh my God, this sounds really great.
Whose idea was this to go back and start it all over and make an album out of it and come back to Bonnaroo to sort of celebrate?
Well, we started doing this live vinyl series a couple years ago. This will be the third volume of it. And we were just trying to do, you know, just to kind of showcase the live side of the band on, you know, on recording or whatever, because we really had only done our Okanokos album so long ago. And we were like, you know, we want there to be other proper documents, because there's tons of, you know, bootleg recordings or whatever.
Sure.
But it's so cool when you have a live show properly mixed and properly, you know, just sounds so good. So we started doing that. And throughout that, we want to jump around in time a lot. So we were trying to think of what's one of the earlier shows that people talk about all the time that we have access to the multi-track recording of it and stuff. And Bonnaroo was one that, you know, came up quickly as one that people always talk about from the earlier part of our career. So luckily we found the files and were able to mix it properly.
How much did it change? I mean, you said you guys, when you walked off, you felt like this is the band, but you beforehand, you know, you said you kind of had that defeatist, this will be our last one. And that sort of, was that from that point on, you're like, we can do this and we found our voice, so to speak, and all of that. And then move forward immediately, or did it still kind of ride the roller coaster a little bit for a while?
Oh God. Yeah, it's always roller coaster. You know, it's like a basketball game or something. You know, it's like a close game. You know, it's like you're winning and then you're down, you know, and you think that you're lost, and then somehow you get it back and you get back. You know, it's like, at least that's how it's been for me. I don't ever, nothing's ever guaranteed, and I don't ever feel really that confident about anything. And as the world goes and changes, it's crazy too, because it's like what the world wants changes and shifts, you know. And even within the time we've been a band, some years things are down and it feels like, you know, oh, does anybody even care anymore? And then other years they're back up and like, oh, I guess people do like the band, oh, that's cool. You know, it's like, and it's really just feels all out of your control. You know, it's like all you can do is try and make the best music you can, you know, and try and play the best shows you can. But the rest of it, it's so out of my control.
How did 03 and 04, how did that lead into 08, which was that 4 hour started at midnight, also had rain, seems to be a theme.
I know, it's crazy. Well, I think there was a couple more in between there.
Yeah,
I think
2005 and 6. 2005 and 6. 2005 is the one with the goofy things on stage, right? You had like
we had the
Marie
puppets,
Antoinette, and a giraffe and a bumblebee or something, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Those are the squalus puppeteers from Louisville. You know, we just every year we were like, okay, if we're gonna keep coming back to this place, we wanted to try and do something different every year, you know, because we kept coming back. So we're like, what can we do? You know, can we bring puppets? Can we, you know, what can we do besides change the music, obviously, you know, because that's the first obvious thing. You want to keep changing up the sets and changing up and, you know, putting new music in there and switching the order and, you know, letting the improv moments, they're going to always just be what they are or whatever. But so yeah, then we kind of worked towards 2008 or whatever, there, yeah, there were just so many covers that we wanted to do and so many songs that we did that late night set, and we really didn't have a time limit. You know, they weren't really? Like most sets, especially festival sets, you've got a hard time limit. You know, you've got an hour, 30 minutes. You know, if you go over, you're fucked. Everybody's pissed. You know, but that's the cool thing about playing these late night festivals sometimes, is they're like, whatever, man, play as long as you want. So we just played and played and played and played and played and played and played. You know, and it just, it was just, yeah, it seemed to, yeah, it was so long.
I'm just, do you plan on doing a hard out this year, or are you just going to go?
We don't know. There's I mean, if it's fun, you know, it's hard to say what the spirit will be like and what the time will be like. But I mean, we're excited to play, and yeah, it's another one of those things where who knows how long it'll go.
So when you look at the list, it's 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2008, 2011, 2013 solo or with the side project, and then 2015. Oh, yeah. Of all of those, I mean, if we call Chance the Rapper the mayor of Bonnaroo, you've got to be the fun uncle. You know, of all of these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 appearances at Bonnaroo, with a super jam in there as well, with someone who shall not be named. Which one's your favorite? Do you have a specific memory that sticks out for you?
God, I mean, doing that super jam with John Oates was so beautiful, like getting to collaborate with him, and all the different, I mean, there's so many different moments, so many different people. It's like so many different, it's really like a blur of light or something, you know. It's kind of like looking back on your life on your deathbed or whatever. There's just like so many things that were so beautiful, you know, and so many things that were trying and hard, and so much love and so much joy, so much exhaustion, so much heat, so much wetness. You know, it's just like it really is a little capsule of
sounds like every relationship life I've ever been in.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's just like, it's another life. It's just another lifetime, another part of this existence that's just like a little different. You know, it's like a little it's somewhere you get to go run wild, wild and free, you know.
Did any of those later ones feel like the first one? I mean, the first one is always so, first of anything can always be so special. And I mean,
honestly, every single one was special in its own way, because we still, you know, every single one of them, like, this is the thing I don't think a lot of bands realize, especially as you go on through your career. At least for us, like, every fucking time we play, we're like, we gotta bring this shit, because if we don't, this could be over. You know, if people come and see us and they're like, oh, they suck this time, you know, 2004 is great, but 2006 they sounded like shit, you know, they were half drunk and like could barely play, you know. It's like, so it's like we've always taken it really serious. Like tonight, for example, we're in Belgium, where basically our career started, in Holland and Belgium, and it's like been a long time since we're here. And so we're playing Belgium tonight, and it's like, we better fucking be good, you know, or else people are going to see us and they're going to be like, oh, they used to be good so long ago, back in 2002. They were so great, but now they're stuck. You know, it's like, so there's that kind of pressure, you know, that comes in, that's part of the deal, you know. But yeah, so every Bonnaroo we've ever done, we're like, fuck, man, how do we like up the ante? You know, how do we beat 2004, how do we beat 2008, like, how do we keep this fun? And I think now it's like, I don't know, yeah, it's just like, that's been a big part of it. And also, you have fun, you know, like, how do we do this and have fun too? But the fun part a lot of times isn't in your control either, because you know you might want something to be fun, but then your amp breaks, or your guitar's out of tune, or you feel like shit that day, or you're sad or depressed, and you know, it's like, fun you can't always force to happen.
Are you a fan also? I'm assuming that you are, of the farm and the artists that are playing. How much time does the band and you spend on a normal Bonnaroo year just meandering around watching other stuff?
I mean, it's different every year. For the first years, we weren't touring quite as much, so we would go for the whole time pretty much, you know, and just run wild for the whole time. And other years have been different. Other years we'll stay longer and hang, and then some years you're on tour or whatever, you know, and the only time you can play, like, that's kind of how this year is. Like, it's like that we have to just come play our set and then leave because we have to get to the next place. Or, you know, there's all those variables. Well, I hope they kind of open it. One thing that's kind of gotten tough about it too is that they've locked it down a lot as it's changed ownership and it's changed hands from whoever owns it or whoever manages it now. It used to be easy to run around to different stages and see different artists, and now it's all locked down and you can't get on the side of the stage unless you have a VIP pass, or you can't get, you know, it's like you can't really move around as easily as you used to be. And that's something that's been really bummer that I hope the organizers can change, because I think a part of what makes a festival special, that it, how Bonnaroo used to be and how Newport Folk Festival still is artists should be really able to see each other easily and to meet and to go watch the other tents. Because that's half the fun is, you know, you're playing at this stage over here, but you want to zoom over here to this stage and see this artist that you've always wanted to see. But after you keep trying to go do that and you can't get in, you know, it's like, and I understand there have to be some rules. You know, you can't go into Paul McCartney's dressing room or whatever. You know, it's not like you should be able to go everywhere.
Yeah.
But the way it used to be, though, and I'm not trying to just be like, the way it used to be, you know, like waxing for the old times. I think it should be like this. Always is there should, especially at these festivals, there's this incredible opportunity for new collaborations to happen, for new artists to inspire each other and meet and create.
Sure.
That's how so many things that I've been involved in came from those
moments.
Totally agree.
That I could have never planned.
Totally agree.
As the corporations get more of a stranglehold on these festivals, though, they're really locking it down. And it, like last time we were at Bonnaroo, it was after we had walked, like, you know, all the way across to some way, way far tent, way out in the middle of nowhere. And we had played, I think it was the year we played the big stage or whatever. So we even had a pass for the big stage, and they wouldn't let us in to see the band that was playing over there or whatever. And we still watched the thing from, like, we went out in the crowd, but then we were like trying to get back to our bus, and they had these golf carts. They've literally like a row of like five empty golf carts sitting there with just people sitting in them. And we like walked up to the thing. It's like 4 a.m. We're completely wasted, you know. And we walk up to the golf carts and we have our passes and we're like, yeah, is there any way that you can take us back to our bus behind the main stage? Here's our pass. And all the kids that are controlling the golf carts, they go, no, I'm sorry. These are only for Party Like a Rockstar VIPs.
Okay.
We were like, people think we just partied like rock stars. People think we're like rock stars partying out here, and we can't even get a fucking golf cart back to the bus. You know, it's just like so funny.
Let's wrap up here in a second. In the spirit of that, though, you think you're finding yourself on the Super Jam stage this year? Are you going to make a triumphant return?
I don't even know when the Super Jam is or who's doing it.
Wong. You're a Corey Wong guy? You a Corey Wong fan?
I don't know who that is, sadly.
Okay. All right. Well.
But I'll check him out.
All right. Jim, look, I can't say thank you enough, not just for being here. This part is inconsequential, but for what you mean to every Bonnarooian, what you mean to the farm, what you mean to the festival, what you bring to the culture of all of it. I hope I don't speak for the entire group of us, but man, I can't thank you enough for being who you are and what you mean to the festival. Thank you so much.
I'm very sincere when I said that Awake Show literally changed my life for a lot of good reasons.
Thanks so much. So
thank you so much for doing this.
I'm so grateful.
Yep.
Thank you. I'm so grateful to be a part of it.
We're grateful to have you. I think you mean the most to the farm that I think an artist could. So thank you for all of that.
Thank you so much.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Jim James on the What Podcast. You know, Barry, I know it's been your white whale. It's the one that you've been wanting the most. I would argue, Taco, you're the historian here. Have we had a bigger artist ever on the What Podcast?
Absolutely not. This is the biggest one we've gotten so far.
This is the one we've been waiting for. When we started this whole thing, we said, you know what? If we get Jim James, we can shut it all down. So, hate to say, this is the last one we'll ever do.
Hope Good you night, enjoyed
everybody.
It.
Yep.
He was so nice and so
incredible.
Great.
So kind with his time and a very lovely man.
Yeah. And he said everything for me that I hoped he would say, that even stuff I didn't, you know, couldn't ever have hoped that he might say. Like, he gets pretty deep. You know, he got pretty deep talking about being on stage in that storm and just what the festival means and that first year. Everything was great. Every answer was just exactly what I hoped to have heard.
It was an absolute honor, and I really do hope that we give them back everything that they gave us over the last 8 different chances to see him at Bonnaroo. So, again, this is one for the ages. I'm so happy, and I feel like we, I don't know how we stole 30 minutes of his time, but
yeah, from Belgium.
I feel incredibly lucky. And I'm so thankful for the people that helped make this happen. It's been a long time coming. We spent over a year on this. I couldn't have been happier that he's as great of a human being as I thought he was. Even though it took us a little time, it came through. And
I'm glad we waited because worked out the timing with the release of the record.
Yeah, and which I'm very excited to hear. Perfect. I can't wait to relive it, and especially when the documentary comes out. All right, guys, thank you. Thank you for being part of the What Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.
Consequence Podcast Network.